Following situation, the former secretary who used to work in this office could only put out 5 letters a day. She got paid so much money. And I come in after her, and I can do easily 25 letters a day. I'm getting paid the same as she's doing. So then I can't sign it well. The working reporter is only do 5 letters a day. I'm happy to do that in half a day, and 50 a day, so I can relax the rest of the day. But then it's not so. Every person who has a job is free of lava to help that has to put in his head. They doesn't have to go crazy, they doesn't have to go sugar on the job. They have to do as much work as they can. The Raman quotes this from the Gemara based on the Pasuk by Yaakov Avinu. I tell you that you keep a tall Pasuk of Alati with Avichem. So the Shem has a whole Avisha Tanu. So Gezel's man is like Gezel also. But this man is already coming to the Balabot after work from 9 to 5. I use part of that time for myself. I take extra coffee breaks, I talk on the telephone or something. That's an act of guilt. Moshe has a tshuva where the Malamdim were complaining, the teachers in the school were complaining that they're underpaid and they wanted the members of the board to give them an increase. And they didn't have any money. So the Malamdim decided on their own that they're going to come 9:30 in the morning. Why should they wake up at 5 o'clock midnight and then come to school at 9 o'clock if they're not getting paid so much anyway? So they'll relax and they'll come in late and they'll leave early and they'll take it easy. Why should they go out of their way? Moshe said, this is forbidden. They have an option. If they want, they can leave them. They can always leave the job if they want. It's called them that they've agreed to work on that job. For that salary, even though it's an obligation that the board doesn't pay them what they deserve, it's called them that they're there, so there's a dinner. Paul has to work the whole place. We just discussed a few minutes ago, maybe that it's not a din by a malama who teaches there. It could be that it's not a din of a poem chiv lalik b'chal tefah because he really gets paid not to do any work. It could be that it's a dikin din. Abar rosa malacha tashem reli, which may be better or worse. Maybe a bigger avir, maybe less of an avir. But Moshe doesn't go into those details. He assumes that a malama also has a din of stewards tail, and then the din applies to the poem chiv lalik b'chal tefah. The Gemara has a din learned out in our Pasuk that a person has a job, can always quit in the middle of the job. Sometimes it will be a Chil Hashem, let's say the rabbi decides he wants to quit now. He gets himself a better position for Hashem and kisses his goodbye to the Balabas. Now they're going to get another rabbi. They won't find him until the Chil Hashem, until the David Gedolah. But just strictly speaking from the aspect of Chil Hashem, so the Gemara learns out in the Pasuk that the Pearl has the right to quit on the job. There is a big machlekes in Acharon and what that means. The pasuk from which we derive this din is "Yiligunei Yisrael Avadim LaAvadim LaAvadim," and if you would say that the Torah is not permitted to quit on the job, that's as if he's treated as an eved. You can't tell me I'm an eved. I'm not. You can't tell every Jew has to be self-employed. You can't say it's forbidden for a Jew to work for somebody else. Every Jew has to be self-employed because "Yiligunei Yisrael Avadim LaAvadim." That's not shy. So this pasuk tells us that when you're not self-employed, it's not a violation. You're not considered an eved, but if you can't quit in the middle, so then you are stuck. You're fast clock, you're like an eved. The more derives in this pasuk that Paul Yochel Aksabos in the middle of this month. So the Achrayim have a machlekes. What does that mean? That means I want to quit on the job and become self-employed. From now on, I'm not going to work for anybody else. I want to quit on the job and work for someone else. It's going to pay me better. It's going to give me better working conditions or something. Maybe the only time it's permissible to quit is if you want to be self-employed. But if you want to quit one position, take a different position, so then how is that Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim Avadim Avadim? He's still going to be working for somebody else.
If you have the same
facility
for the other
guy, what's going to be over here? Right. So that's the machlokes of Sacharim. It's the children of Shlomo. It's good to have a question, but they have this machlokes. It's generally assumed. I think the outcome of all our posting is that you do have the right to quit. Mike Mechayon, you assume that people do have the right to quit. Even if their reason for quitting is that they're going to get better conditions somewhere else. Not that they want to be self-employed, they don't want to work for somebody else. The posting is Megala, that a poet is not an eved. So once he's not an eved, there's no kinyon, so he can quit. There is a restriction though, the Gemara has in Bava Metzia. We said a restriction of Chil Hashem. Sometimes our brother make a Chil Hashem and they use this din, a Poel Yachal Aftimah. The Lamdim and Yeshiva sometimes make a Chil Hashem off in the middle of the year. They quit and then they stick to the school has a job to go find another Malam. Sometimes it's called a Chil Hashem. But in addition to that, sometimes Al Pi Din, he's considered not a Hamaz because he's not allowed to quit if it's a Dabah Abe. The Gemara says, let's say the roofer was engaged by Balabas to fix his roof before it rained, before it snowed. And I agreed I'm going to do the job. And then I decide, well, that's it, I'm not going to do the job. And now he doesn't have anybody else who can do it. Everybody else only has all their jobs built up. So his house is going to be raining into his house, and the furniture is going to get ruined, and the walls will get ruined, and the rug is going to get ruined. So the Gemara says, if you have a situation of a dog ha'aved, or let's say it's time for the harvest, and the poilim agreed to do the harvest, and this farmer got his workers, they got their workers, they got their workers, all the workers traveled in a different state, South Carolina, North Carolina, everybody got a job somewhere else. And now, this white guy working quits in the middle, and then the farmer can't get any other workers to cut the food. So what can he do? He can't do it all by himself, that's tremendous cost. It's going to be a double harvest, they have to sit money. But if that's the number, then it's another mamazik. By quitting on the job in the middle, when you can't get anyone to replace you, that's considered another mamazik. I don't have to pay any time out of mamazik because it's only grama benizik and grama benizik and itzotza. But the Gemara says in Bavabasa, Zayt HaMeri, grama benizik and itzotza. But the Yisrael HaHazik applies even to the situation of grama. Some Shem hold that it's even a mitzvah deraisa. The Yisrael HaHazik is a mitzvah deraisa even by grama. Others say no, that the Yisrael by grama is... Since Ramah ben Ezekiel is Tafas, so the Yisra Lahazik is the Rabban. But whatever the Yisra is, either an Yisra, the right of Yisra Rabban, there is an Yisra, it's also to go attach to somebody. Not only is there a din, a double harvest, you're not permitted to quit on the job, the double harvest, Ramah ben Ezekiel is Tafur, and Tafur Medini Yadim Chaybi Dini Shammah. That's the Gemara in Balakam of Perek HaKayne, Ramah ben Ezekiel is Chaybi Dini Shammah. Chaybi Dini Shammahin leads us into the Shita of Rashi and Pesach and Bamakir by Sarah Tawah. And the method of Chaybi Dini Shammahin, Shita will help. Tzitzit will help lead us to the following situation. Let's say I quit, I'm a teacher in Yeshiva, and I quit today. I've had it. And then I have to get someone else next week. But no one else is willing to do what I do for the same salary that I get paid. They're going to get paid twice as much. So now, and it says in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch, and that's how we pass in Allah, that a Malamin is considered double harvest. Because to leave Talmidim without a Rebbe teaching them is a double harvest. You can't say, well, he'll teach an extra week. He's not going to teach an extra week. He's going to teach the same as everybody else, and you're going to be missing the whole week. Even if he will teach an extra week, the fact that the Talmidim will be buckled, he won't be learning in the first for a whole week, will throw everything off kilter. So that's considered a double harvest. And the double harvest, I'm forbidden to back out. And I'm chayv din shamayim to pay the hefzer. I had the brevet to tell the administration in advance that I'm not going to come back this year, get yourself some other sucker to do the work at this salary. But I didn't tell them that. I agreed to work for that salary. But then if I quit in the middle, and now they have to engage somebody else to do the work for me, they have the right to engage, and they can make me pay din shamayim, I'm required to pay for the hefzer. Let's say I'm going to pay $20,000. You're going to have to pay someone else $40,000. I have to pay the extra $20,000. The only thing is that that's only B'dinah Shemayim. So they can't bring me to a Dinteri yet, B'dinah Shemayim. They're not holding to B'dinah Adam now. But, what if they owe me salary? They didn't pay me my check from the last month or from the last 3 months. So then, Tzita helps. So we passed in the Shulchan Aruch that Tzita helps and Achid lost B'dinah Shemayim. So they can hold that check that they didn't pay me yet to make me pay the extra amount of money from the extra $20,000 they're going to have to pay the next Malamed. So they make me pay from the money that they're holding from me. That's what says it's right in Kiddushin. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's Tzita helps and Achiv lots of Neshamayim. And this is the case of Grava Menizikin. When the Pearl quits on the job by the Dover Harvest. In school, in Yeshiva, that's considered the Dover Harvest. And sometimes when you engage the teacher in the middle, they want more than the first guy wants. There is a major machlekes in Shulchan Aruch that comes up la'alah, but what if the teacher signed a contract in the beginning of the year that they're going to work till June, they're going to do the job? The halacha that the folk can quit in the middle, does that only apply if no contract was made or if no kinyan was made, or does it even apply if a kinyan was made? So the Ramah quotes one opinion from Rishonim that Bamed Ramamurim, when does the halacha allow the poel to quit in the middle? It's talking even when there's no double harvest. Some to quit on the job. They said you can get a lamdim, a dime, a dozen. There's no problem. The shaila is he allowed to quit in the middle? So the Ramah quotes one opinion that is fun on the other, so maybe kinyan stood there with the poel. Or if he signed a contract and he gave the shtar was also served as a nice opinion. So then the din would be that the poel al-pidin is not able to back out. If you should assume like that, so then you have another chumra that in a yeshiva, or let's say in a rabbinical position, something like that, where the malamed or the rabbi is working for the klal. It depends, not always, but sometimes the yeshiva is privately owned, so he's working for the owner of the yeshiva. But most yeshivas that I'm familiar with are not private, it's not a private concern. It's not a private based bank or something. It's a klal organization. So Rabbi Kivega quotes from the Darkei Moshe, the Ramah, on the bottom of the tour, he quotes from the Mar Tanbov Mitzvah, that Rabbi Meinam Tzrich Mekinyan, these are out of order, this is number six, that Rabbi Meinam Tzrich Mekinyan, that the only time you need a Kinyan, if I own, let's say, a tape recorder, I own a watch, or I own a house, the only time you need a Kinyan is if you want to be machmer to a private person, to a shutzen. What if I want to be machmer to the tzibur? So then Rabbi Kivega quotes from the Mordechai that there's no need for a mighty Kinyan. It's nikta the dibur alone. Chazanish also has this chiddush independently somehow. For some reason or another, he doesn't quote the Mordechai, but Rabbi Kivega in the Dag Moshe. He writes on his own from the Mishnah in the Dorn, and we feel like that. And he says that is the Yisrael Adin of Hefker. Why does Hefker work? Hefker goes out from a Pesach in Parshas Mishpat, and Hashvi, Tishnitenu, and Atashto. You can be mafkir the dibur alone. Why? Because Hefker means haknor l'rabbis. I'm machna my property to the public, and whoever wants has the right to take it. Not that it becomes only a list, it becomes public property, but it's not like public property like City Hall. It belongs to the municipality, no one has the right to take it. Hefker is public property that any member of the public has the right to take it. So who are the nominees that has any right to machna anything to the people, machna anything to the community, wouldn't need a king. But the Marcha even has more than that. Not only for the tzibur, he says, whenever you have a group of three people or more, he says that that's already called a rab. Let's say I work for a business which is owned by a partnership of three or more people. He says three or more, it already has a shem rabbi, because there's a machlokes and gittin. By letter, shalitah al shem rabbi, whether the shem rabbi needs 10 or shem rabbi needs 3. So based on that gemara, you have to take a look. Based on that gemara, it would appear that they all agree that three is rabbi. Just machlokes by shvuah. Nishba dat rabbi. But in Kol HaTorukul, everybody seems to agree that three would be sufficient. So if one should follow this chumrat haramo, that whenever a kinyan was made, then the poil cannot back out. The poil can only back out because there's no kinyan. I don't belong to the poil, but whenever I made a kinyan, and that's a shiva that the child is either kinyan scooter or a kinyan star, then who are dinami, if you work for a tibur, or you work for the klal, or perhaps even if you work for three or more shutzim, going to the mortai, just the deeper alone it would be considered as if a kinyan had been made, and then the poil wouldn't be able to back out. The Shach, Ahmed Ramor, almost all these dinim are in Shinam and Gimel, seriously. The Shach and Chayshimishpat, and the Shach and Yudalev, the other Rapparanim all disagree with the Ramor. They say that Rav HaRishonim don't accept this view, and they hold that even if you sign the contract, you can also back out. So what is the contract worth? Nothing. The same way you sign a contract, you don't sign a contract. Say no, it's like you're giving your promise that you're not going to back out until that month. It's a moral obligation, but legally in Chesh Mishpat they can't force you to stay on the job. If you want to quit, you may quit. It's just that it's highly improper. It's a violation of Hesed. What if, let's say, a single girl got a job teaching in a school in Queens? It happens all the time. And then in the summer she got engaged and she gets married and Chodesh Tishrei and her husband lives in Lakewood. She's going to go travel every day to Queens, so she says goodbye. She wants to quit.
Don't they realize when they give her the job that this could happen? So it's like, it's about time.
So that's the Shiloh. So they have to be fair about these things. I think like you also. I think it's very easy, but some have a principle, don't think like that. So the Chodesh Mishpat, strictly speaking, says that the Kinyan that was made is meaningless. It's just that it's a Hain Tzedek. And the Hain Tzedek al pi kashrus can't be more than the Mishnah in the Dorim on Daf Chaf Zayin. The Mishnah says in the Dorim that if I swear to you that I'm going to attend your wedding, I'll take an oath or a nether or something, and then later on somebody gets sick in the family, chalahu or shachalah beno or something like that. So even though physically I am able to come, you can't say that it's an Rahman Patrick or Nahul or Sasadev, it's not that kind of anointing, but physically I'm unable. I'm not in traction in the hospital that I can't walk, I can come. But I have a bad cold, or one of the children is sick, chalahu, shachalah beno. So the Mishnah says that it's understood that the Kihai governor, he never took the letter, he never obligated himself. Al-Tikashtus, if an anus comes up, even if the person obligated himself with a contract and ain't said it, the Pashtus is it's an anus, it's understood. But the Kihai governor, the person never meant to stay on the job. It's understood that there's no violation if they back out. Not that the truth is to back out on their own, and you can't say that it's a drum of, you can't say it's a drum of Minizik and that they're not allowed to back out by God, but they have no prayer. It's understood that she's not going to sleep in Queens all week and then go home to her husband, and her husband's not going to stay in Lakewood a whole week and come to Queens. It's understood that the Kiyah government, there was no obligation. There are Hashulchan quotes in the Chassam Sefer, the Tzitzit also quotes that the meaning in Europe was that some Rabbanim, when they would have contracts, someone had a 5-year contract, someone had a 3-year contract. So he says there's a reason for this number, not a life contract, either 3 years or 5 years. So there are more quotes in opinion that a poyo who obligates himself to work on the job too long is in violation of the din of believing in Angel Avodim or Avodim Avodim. How long is too long? He quotes, there's a Machlokes of Rishonim, there's two versions of this. The first person doesn't see the Avodim Avodim, and other Rishonim present it differently. Some say that if he obligates himself for more than 3 years, because the Pasuk says that he has a degree, was a very nice fellow, he should give him Hanik Tanik Lo, because Kinishnas Kasach Avodim, he works for you twice as long as a Toyo. The Toyo works only as normal, the Toyo works 3 years, and the Avodim works for 6 years. So based on that reading of the Pasuk, it would appear that the normal man of an Eved would be for, the normal man of a Toyo would be for 3 years, and one would be forbidden, that's the Sham Shem say, one would be forbidden would read to work on a job for more than 3 years. So that's why the meaning was in some communities that the rabbi's contract would be only for 3 years and not for more. In other communities, they held like the other Rishonim, the Nishnas Chasach HaRavot, so the Gemara explains, means She'ova Bayom Balaylo. The normal, the average time that a Poyal works is 6 years, but the Yadrivi works twice as long because he works Bayom Balaylo, that he has Lodis from the Shivchak Nainis for the Yodar. And the Poyal only works Bayom, he doesn't work Balaylo. But he works for 6 years. But to sign the contract that's agreed to work on a job for 6 years would be permissible. For more than 6 years would be also, but 6 sounds funny. You have a 5-year contract. Sounded better. Yeah, you can have a one-way obligation if the boss is agreeable. That the worker has the push to stay on the job even past the time, but he has the right to quit. He's not obligating himself. He's never obligated, but he's obligated with the hypothetic. He doesn't accept the hypothetic for longer than 3 years or 6 years, but the boss does obligate himself. The Moshe has a tshuva, number 8, the Moshe has a tshuva. What happens if he signs a contract for 3 years or 6 years, whatever it is, 5 years, and then the time is up and the boss wants to fire the worker? So the pashtus in the Shulchan Aruch is, when the contract is up, goodbye. He has no obligation. Moshe has a difficult tshuva, which is really in the pashtus in contradiction to all of the Acharonim who discussed the whole topic. As in Chelek Hashem Mishpat, he writes that whenever a boss engages a worker, even for a year or two, and even if he says explicitly, you don't have any chazok, you have no excuse to stay on later, nevertheless it's understood, al pidin, which Ramesh explains, it says, understood al pidin, that the worker has the security, the worker has the excuse to stay on to the job as long as he's able to function properly. If he's an old man and he can't do the job well, he's not. But he's still able to do the job well, and the boss still needs them. Let's say they had a school. It's also about Yeshiva, they had a school. And now, after 5 year contract is up, they have half the number of students, so they need half the number of teachers. So this teacher's contract is up, the others are not. So they say goodbye to him, and the others they have to pay. So the teacher can't insist, no, but Ramesh has a tshuva. Ramesh has a tshuva only if they still need a teacher, but if they have half the number of students and they're cutting down on the classes, then there's no time. But if they still need someone, they're going to hire someone else, and he's still able to do the job well, so then he has the school. Even without writing into the contract, Moshe says he has the suit for the job. He can remain on the job. Pashtus is there, it's not so. What's still doing the job well? That's what Moshe has in his series. What's still doing the job well? He says doing the job well means that he gives the children homework, and he disciplines them, and he gives them little shemayim, and he explains things to them. Just because he doesn't get along with the principal, that's not called not doing the job well. It's called personality wise. They rub each other the wrong way, they don't get along, that's not called not doing the job.
No, he's not doing the job well.
He doesn't come across to the Talmud, but he's not doing it. That's the definition of not doing the job well. But if the Talmud like him, just a member of the board, don't like his ashtar, he's too right wing or too whatever. They don't like him. He doesn't represent the Torah, not the image that they want. They don't like his black hat or his beard. But the Talmud is not trying to be kind of, the Talmud is not too good. And he's teaching them. So he says, that's not called not doing the job. Then he's qualified. Then he's considered qualified. Yeah, that's what Taisa says. Taisa seems to hold there's never any use to accept any job for any length of time, because you can always quit on the job. So the only going on that Taisa, and that's you know, and that's you. But when you see it close to the mark, and other people disagree, they say no. You have to have, number one, you have the right to quit whenever you want, even in the middle, and number two, that you're not obligating yourself for more than the average time in the days of the Chumash that a worker would have a job, which is either 3 or 6 years. That's the whole thing of the Chumash. Rav Rishon, I don't think holds in that Chumash, the 3 or 6 years. But some say you're right, that that was the reason for the meaning. Some say you couldn't imagine that the reason for the meaning is that the Balabata may be bored, may be fed up with their rabbi after 3 or 5 years, they want to change. He said, couldn't visualize that, but he said, no, it's an Issa on the rabbi's part to have a contract for more than 3 or 5 years. And then he says they can't fire the rabbi anyway after the 3 or 5 years. That's what the Chassam Sofer quotes number 8, the Ramon Yoredei and Reishman Hei. There's not a Chosh Mishma. Reishman Hei, there is the dinim of a Malam, the dinim of Rabbanim. So there's a din that once you've appointed a person to a Sarara, so he's entitled to that Sarara, the Yoredei and Vodim, and then his children are entitled to the Sarara, the Yerusha also. And so they appoint a guy, Rabbi in the Shul. They appoint a Chazan, they appoint any position of Kavod, Rabbi, anything like that, President. It's understood that he has it, the other one, and his children have it after him, unless it's understood that they have election for president every 2 years or every year. Then it's understood, Melech Hatzur, that he was only appointed president for 1 year. Unless they give the rabbi a contract for 3 years, and the minigolem is that they switch rabbis every so often, then the Sweetie H writes in Eastern Europe, the minigolem that they never switched rabbi. The rabbi was there, he was there for a lifetime, and then his children after him, if they have been a terrorist, who gets the rabbanim, whether this son or the other son, or the son-in-law, or the grandson. So it was always assumed that he has the Yom Kippur. So why did he sign a contract for? That the rabbi shouldn't quit Tzeich HaZmana. One-way contract. That the rabbi sort of promising the Hemtzedek that he's not going to quit. Legally he can't quit. But it's the Hemtzedek that he won't quit. But the Balabatim couldn't fight him. But in Western Europe, the Swedish Reich, right, in the last century, it was understood like the Ramon writes, that they appoint a president of the shul or a gabbai for a year or two, and it's understood that the Hasidim are going to appoint somebody else next year. So the president can't find a Hazakia. I was appointed, I want to remain president of the university. He says, by rabbi also. In Western Europe, or Western Europe, in America, it's understood that the Balabatim haven't appointed a rabbi forever. When you have the interview between the rabbi and the Balabatim, and some guy comes up with the Yiddish Einfeld that the rabbi has Chazoket, hogwash, it's ridiculous. In America, rabbi has Chazoket. It's understood that they switch rabbis. In growing community, you can say the rabbi has Chazoket. Because they have the minhag that the rabbi stays a whole lifetime. But in all the regular modern American shuls, it's understood that the Balabatim do have the right to appoint another rabbi after the contract is up. But it's not, the Sarara Milo Hatzila was only Mizman. It wasn't the Yoredei Vodim. The Shaila is, let's say the teacher doesn't teach well. He's not doing his job well. So then you have the right to drop him. That's number 10. It says that the teacher doesn't teach well, you don't have to pay him a salary. It says you don't have to prorate it either. That's not good. He's doing 70% of the job, so you have to pay him 70%, but he already did. He leaves now at the end of the year. You owe money, you don't have to pay him 70%. You don't have to pay him anything, because he didn't do what he's supposed to do. Okay, a painter paints my house and he does a poor job. So it says that I have to pay him. I don't have to prorate it. Pay him accordingly. I'm going to have someone do it over again, the way it was done now. Even if I won't have someone do it over, I'm not happy. This is not the way it was understood. Now, I'm about to have a kaina. I thought it was going to come out better. It's not a kaina. But if everybody knows that that's a poor job, then the Ksei says, I don't have to pay a penny. Chazanish has a Chayshamishpi. He tries to ding up a little bit, but they rise the Ksei. But in the end, he thinks that the Ksei is probably right without a rai. So he says, right. He says, on a rai, he's right. Without the rai, he's right. So if the Malamed isn't doing a good job, then you have a right and the obligation to fire him. The Gemara says in number 11, and Bamasi Dafkuf says, whenever you have a worker who's not doing a good job, you have to warn him first. Tell him, let's say, he's not doing the job right. Tell him nicely, I want you to do it like this. You have to tell him a few times. And then if he doesn't, shape up. So then you have a right to drop him. By a doctor, though, if the doctor's not treating the patient well, so the Gemara says, you don't warn him a few times. You wait till 10 people die, and then you're fine. The Gemara says, he's causing hepsis. People are dying. People are getting maimed. So you drop him without warning. The Gemara says, the same is true by a Malamed. A Malamed is maiming the children. But if he's not teaching well, you have the right and the obligation to fire him without warning him in advance. Just to reverse what people think. The Malamed even being allowed a job, stays on and has offered the other voice. Not so. The Malamed has to be committed and obligated to fire him without any warning. Without any warning, because it's committed from the end of the Gemara says. Hope say to the Lehada, whenever he's causing a hepsis on the job, it's irrevocable, irreversible, you have the obligation to fire him right away. The only shot is, how do you ascertain that he's doing a lousy job? The kids complain to the parents, give too much homework. They're ready, if you didn't give any homework, they're going to give too much homework. It's a good amount. The parents have to help the kids. The parents always like to watch television, go away to Europe, to go. And now they have to help the kids with the homework. So So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's good. So the teacher gives so much homework that the kids can't do it on their own. Every night the parents have to stay up till 11:30 with homework. So that's so someone has to tell a rebbe. That's not a state of the lehada. The rebbe is a lousy rebbe. That's a state of the lehada. The kids are not getting Jewish money, they're not learning, they're being turned off. Giving too much homework, that's not a state of the lehada. So you want to try to straighten out the rebbe. I don't think that would be ground for firing him right away. Let's say the Rebbe is really doing a bad job, and then you have the right and the obligation to carry him by letter. Because it's not even the same. You have to have that one. You have to serve that thing, whether he's doing a good job or a bad job. So people have to come and testify that he gets in place and eats his sandwiches, and the kids are wild, they're running around, and he reads the newspaper, and he has the New York Times spread out, and he has a sheet up on his head. So who's going to testify to this? The kids. So the kids are the Bali's boy, the kids are Sonic. The kids are Bali's burn. The kids are related to the parents. The parents are paying tuition that the Rebbe should teach them. So the kids are Bali's burn. Even if the parents are mitzvah, the Bali's burn. The parents are a lot of the Bali's burn. The administration of the school is probably also Bali's burn. They want to get rid of him. They have so many complaints, they want to get rid of him. So you can't take their book and have this interior unless the Rebbe admits it on his own. He says, yeah, I have my feet on the table and I've been in New York Times. He's made all that. It's a promise if he tells you the truth. But if it's not clear, if the Rabbanim walk through the school, and if he can tell the way he's resolved on the job, okay? So then they know on their own. They don't need any aid. But if he swears up and down, it's not true. He always prepares, and he never comes in unprepared, and he always comes in on time. And everybody knows he always comes late, and he's never prepared, and he doesn't teach, and everything's faithless. So then whom do you believe? So you can't believe the children, you can't believe the parents, you can't believe the administration. So you have to have outside witnesses. That's very difficult. So the Pesukim points this out. Whenever you want to fire a rabbi, the rabbi can also be fired if he's not doing his job. So the rabbi doesn't prepare his sermon. Or if he cares, and with preparing, it says, well, he says, all about my right to fire him. But that's the Pesukim is all the shy that's wrong. Wrong means really wrong. Lakers and he goes, the Kumra or the Kumra, whatever, you can't say it's wrong. But if it's obviously wrong, so then he's not doing his job well. I try to have, what if the rabbi who did good sermons and he prepares and he passes everything right, but he happens to be on the Hal Shabbos and he doesn't wash Negelot, he doesn't keep Tariq on the Shkoche, but as a rabbi, he's a perfect rabbi. So the Pesukim says, you have no grounds to fire. It's not the obligation of the rabbi to be observant. You don't get paid to be religious. Every Jew has that obligation. I remember I was saying this year for the RTA a few years ago, so he said, what was that? Did you say that again? No one said, what was that line here? That's a Shuvah Nassam Sefer. And the Maram Sheikh, they talk about that. That's not part of the rabbi's obligation. He doesn't get paid that he should be frum. He has to be frum like everybody has to be observant. He's supposed to be more observant than them because he knows more than them. But you can't fire him because he's not observant. That's not what they're paying him for. They're paying him to function properly, to function, hey, he should dress neatly, he should make a nice presentation, he should prepare his sermon, prepare his shiur, he should speak well, and he should pass him properly, and so on. So if he does his job well, even though in his personal life he's not observant, that's not grounds for firing him. The Shaila the Pesukim discusses that if he personally is not observant, then you can't rely on his stocking when he passes the Shaila. So the Pesukim say, you can't rely on his stocking, he's doing his job well. So you have to continue paying him his salary. He's doing his job well. And then you have to hire another dayan. You have to pay money for another dayan who will be religious, whom he will be able to rely on his stuff.
Rabbi's never hired to be a role model for the community?
You're the role model. It's public knowledge, then not. I'm talking about that he's not doing his job well. Right. But it's only privately. If you balabatim know that he's resolved on this, he's resolved on that, they couldn't visualize a rabbi who does that. They're speaking about the rabbi who walks down the ramas without washing negavas in the morning. Or he never washes before bread. They don't speak about the little shabbos and paradigm shabbos. They talk about the smaller rabbi. So the Shabbat, when you want to fire a Malamed and you want to fire a Rabbi, you have to have Eidim Kshayim. So the Balabat, you can't come to the Din Torah and say that the Rabbi said this in his sermon and tell over to the Dayan what he said. And isn't that a lousy sermon? Isn't that terrible? But the Rabbi came in, it was obvious that he wasn't prepared. The Dayan can't take their word for it because they're the Baladinim. So you can't believe the Baladinim. So you have to have some outsiders who were visiting the community for Shabbat and Yom, and they saw the way the Rabbi was unprepared and his sermon was terrible. These outsiders of a vision can't be related to the Balabatim because the Karev is postulated. The Balabatim is the community who want to get rid of their rabbi. They're the Baladinim themselves, and their relatives are the Karevim to the Baladinim. You have to have outsiders. You have to have visitors who came to the community, Shabbat and Yom Tov, who are not related to the Balabatim. It's a difficult job to give kosher aid, unless the guy will admit on his own that he doesn't do a good job.
But they could hire an investigator. That's what it comes out. consultant.
Okay. And how will the investigator be able to ascertain? He's only made effort. Possibly they give, they're telling him a lot of stuff upon the, and they understand that he's going to do them a favor and teach for nothing, teach well for nothing. But you can't say that he's not entitled for the money. He was doing nothing. He was doing nothing all the time, so he did his job well, not doing nothing. To teach him that he doesn't teach him for nothing. But they didn't have the right to fire him, though. Even though his payment is only coming, they had the right to fire him. Yeah, the safest verb probably should not apply to him alone.
If the yeshiva has a certain regimen in terms of the curriculum, and wants that, you know, so much chumash, so much dinim, so much gemara, and the Rebbe says, you know, he enjoys teaching more dinim or more chumash, and he's doing a good job, but their curriculum says that he should do one more or one or the other, because they then say...
Then the pastor says he's not doing a good job. You have to have a dozen to the mezara, whether they consider that doing a good job or not. Suppose we discuss what if you have Edis and Sedis, what if you have hard to have two partial Edim at the same time, not the children and not the relatives and not the administration, how do you have so many outsiders in the school watching where the Rebbe is mezalkel? So what if you had on one occasion one guy happened to pass by, an outsider, not related to anybody, not one of the members of the board of the school and so on, an outsider passed by and he saw the way the Rebbe was sipping coffee, reading the paper, and the kids were running around on the chairs and in the hall. And on another day, a week later, another eight echad will testify. His eight is the echad is good enough. The Gemara says that eight is the echad is the mayor on two different cases. It's good in mummies. There's no good in the fashion. So the pashtun says that this is just plain old mummies. That's what the pashtun says. And I'll be pashtun, the eight is the echad is good to fire a worker. Even to fire a rabbi, where it's a little more than a worker, you'd be married him with the good luck. Look at a rabbi in Eastern Europe who has a job for a lifetime. They gave him a thorough position. The Abed is Mecheres and say not that he's not doing his job, well, let's say they say that he's not religious. So you're firing him on grounds of him being, if you have the right to fire him because he's not being religious, that's the question. So a rabbi can't fire because he's not religious, that's a chazan, this is the person. Chazan has to be religious. The rabbi doesn't have to be observant, that's not part of that, the chazan, yeah, so it's not. If the chazan does averis, he have a right. He have a chazan with fears. And he's a bal averis, he's not kosher to be a chazan. A rabbi is a bal averis, kosher to be a rabbi. But a chazan is a bal averis, kosher to be. Let's say you have eidus mecheres on a chazan that is a bal averis. So should I consider that? You can't say dim to kosher. He's not going to get a heart attack. Because the stuff will get a heart attack. It's a different consideration if you're going to fire him. We're not talking about heart attack. We're just talking. To fire him from the job is just plain ominous, but to fire him from the job because we're labeling him as a Russia, maybe I should consider that like a Dovah Shabir, but to label a person as a Russia, so maybe for that David Mechadish should be no good. So the Malamed Lohel has a Shuri, says it doesn't matter. It says the famous in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that to label a person as a Russia to pass on him the Edith. Edith Mechadish is good. Gemara says in Sanhedrin that one person testified that he lends money to religious to someone else on one occasion, and another person testified that he lends me money to religious on a different occasion. Mecheres is good, even though you're labeling the person as a Russia. That's not considered even if Russia.
But it came from a school that was conservative, and the board decided to change Orthodox, the rabbi opposed.
What is the rabbi opposed?
The rabbi is a conservative rabbi, or whatever.
The conservative politics, and he is not in favor of moving over to
Orthodox, and the school is in favor of that.
That
grounds
the fire. I mean, according to the bylaws of their charter, they have the right to change it over to Orthodox.
Right.
And now they're stuck with this rabbi. Right. They want to get rid of him. That should be a problem. That should be a problem. Come to these posts and come to the Sanhedrin, and I'm sure he should probably still be entitled to maintain his job. If he's able to pass them properly for them. What kind of sermons is he going to give now? Orthodox sermons, and he can give Orthodox sermons too. He can say neutral to Russia. He's coming back to New York Times. He can function as an Orthodox rabbi also, just that he won't be
Can
I make it better or worse?
I'm sure that's true. could function as an Orthodox rabbi.
And he will. I mean, he will function.
As theoretical.
Then the Philip, he's still entitled to maintain his job. I don't know, in the contract he said that he signed to be a conservative rabbi. I don't know. We'll have to see what it's in the contract. What is his title? There's a problem in a lot of yeshiva quarters when the Lama passes away and his son wants to yarish in the father's position. So the Ramah, we mentioned earlier, the Ramah Yeredeya says that there's Yerusha by Rabbanus and there's Yerusha by all Inyani Srora. That's a shala. The Rav in the community in Eastern Europe is considered as an appointment of Srora and covered for life and for Yerusha and so on. In Western Europe and in America it's not so. And especially the Pashtus is in the yeshiva, the way we have today, the Pashtus is in the yeshiva. You consider a person who's appointed as a Malamed in the yeshiva, that's a position of Sarara. That guy teaches in elementary school, that's a position of Sarara. It's a job. I don't think that's considered a job. The failure to go over the yeshiva is difficult. You see that person who teaches all the Talmudim. The person teaches all the Talmidim has a title that he called Magishir, Ram, or Rosh Hashiva, whatever. So that's more of a shadow. So Ramosha claims in his tshuva, also this tshuva and the other tshuva called a lot of Talmidim. Ramosha claims in his tshuva that there is Schus Yerusha, either Midi Rabbanim or Mitam Midik, or something he claims that there is, or Mitam Midik. There is an issue, there is a source of Yerusha for the children of the Malamed who passed away. And the Shaila that came up aloha nice, the Malamed taught in Yeshiva X. And his son learned in Yeshiva Y. His son never learned in Yeshiva X. The Malamed died from a heart attack at the age of 70. And now they want to appoint another Talmud in his Yeshiva, learned in his Yeshiva. So his son is right, and he has the whole derech of the Yeshiva, the way they govern, the way they approach everything. And the son, who learned in the other yeshiva, so he signed the Kuz Chazok, Yerusha, from his father. So the Hanhal of yeshiva says, but don't we have to give our own Talmidim Kedima? And furthermore, our Talmidim are more equipped, are better equipped to teach in our yeshiva, because they know the whole Teramada Hashkafa, or whatever Hashkafa we want to present. And this guy sent his son to the other yeshiva, they have a different approach. We want a different derech in learning, a different derech in Yerushamayim, a different derech in Avodat Hashem. We want a guy from our yeshiva. Ramosha says no. He thinks that no. He thinks, how different can the Derech and learning be? How different can it be? How different can it be? How different than David and Avodat Hashem? What can it be so different? So, Madrei Tahim, Madrei Tahim, it's all the same thing. I don't know, that's what he says. He says that he thinks, he doesn't have a, it's not a strong tshuva with a strong start. He doesn't think he's right, he doesn't think it's right. He doesn't think it's ethically right that they should take the Talmud who learned in the yeshiva the last 20 years rather than take the son who never walked into the building. He thinks that it's more ethically proper that they should appoint the son. That's a shala. I don't think everybody agrees with Ramesh. I think they would feel that he's not qualified for the job. If the guy learned from other yeshiva, it's a different derech. The yeshivas do have a different derech. Some yeshivas which don't present one derech only. Like an ayeshiva, every Rebbe has his own derech to everything. And learning in Avodat Hashem, Yerushamayim, or non-Yerushamayim, or whatever. Everybody has their own approach to life and everything. Politics, everything is different. So then you can say that this son of the Rebbe doesn't represent the hashkafa of the yeshiva. It's all hashkafa in yeshiva. Every Rebbe has his own hashkafa. But in many other yeshivas, they have one kibun and one derech, and whichever Rebbe doesn't fall in line, they ease him out. They get rid of him because they want to have all the Talmudim trained in one way. One approach to life and everything. And I would think, and this letter of Ramosha was written, Rav Harav Pliny, Yeshiva Pliny, we all know who it was, may not know who it was. That was really a yeshiva where everything was in one derech. All the rabbis were in one derech, and the Rosh Hashiva had to ease everybody out who didn't belong. And that Rosh Hashiva got the heart attack because they wanted to ease him out too. Because he didn't form a line with the Rosh Hashiva. Now they put something, now Ramosha tells him, not only did you have to suffer with the father, you have to trouble with the son who never even learned in the yeshiva. Very difficult. very difficult shit. The Pashto says that the din of Yerusha, even if there were a Hazak, the din of Yerusha only applies if it's Mamala Mikhail Mavaris, if he's qualified for the job. He's not qualified because he learned somewhere else. He never learned in his yeshiva. So he's not going to qualify. And in yeshiva, sometimes you have to have that there are. That the Rabbein should be coffered to the Rosh Hashiva. Depends whether the Rosh Hashiva is just a fundraiser, or the Rosh Hashiva is a man who gives tichot all the time, and he has a certain habracha, and he interviews the Rabbein personally when he hires them, and he only picks them because they have a certain sheet and so on. Yayu, everything is wide open. I don't think this will be a time. Unless you get a guy who's legambre, this will retire. Or legambre, conservative, really conservative. Anybody who's been Orthodox, modern Orthodox, ancient Orthodox, the same person, you'll never know where he would go. So now you shouldn't have such a time, it would be a little bit different. So then you just have the other issue. Which is more ethical? Which is more proper? To appoint a Talmud who learns in the yeshiva for the last, he learns in the high school and the college and the smicha and the title and the next title and the next title. He learns all the law. Is a proper to appoint him? A proper to appoint the son of the Rebbe who died? It's go from a different place. Yeah. So Ramosha claims that they're both equally qualified. Ramosha claims that, that it's more ethical that they should appoint his son. But then he writes at the end of this tshuva that he's related to the son. He was related to the son who was involved in the territory. He says, I can't really say that I'm saying, it's a very short paragraph, so I'll be only one paragraph or two. He says he can't really say that he's saying this without any gear, because he's a Kohen, and that's why he's possible to be a diamond and a dentist. But he says he just thinks that that's what Yosha did. That's the question, whether that's really Yosha or not. Other people feel the Yosha is not so. The Yosha is to appoint the Talmud away from the yeshiva, rather than appoint the son. He would be his father. That's a serious shot.
What's overseeing
with
the issue of the original
by Rabbonis, yeah, by Rabbonis it's understood that a guy doesn't have life tenure unless they really gave him a life contract. The rest of the years are in America, it's understood. But let's say a Rebbe in yeshiva for the first couple of years, it's not understood that he has tenure. But after a certain amount of time, I think it is understood. I don't know exactly what the time is, but after an amount of time, after Rebbe's been there, this I think the Rebbe was there for 25 years, 35 years. He was there before the Rosh Hashiva came in, who wanted to kick him out and gave him a heart attack. He preceded the Rosh Hashiva. So then the Stalmud, they wouldn't be able to drop him. Just forget my time. They wouldn't be able to drop him. Then he probably does have a Chazak. It's understood that he has a life tenure. So then Shabbos, whether the life tenure goes over the Yerusha to his children. That's a serious shot. Chazak and Rabbanus is always an issue in Europe. It's always a very sticky issue. Like it's in a post, it's very questionable. The Gemara has a din, number 14, the Gemara has a din in Kiddushin, if you have an Eved Ivri who works for 6 years and he goes free, what is part of the time he was sick? Let's say when I buy an Eved Ivri, I pay the Eved Ivri $60,000. Let's say one whole year he was sick. So do I have the right to ask him that he should pay me back $10,000? Because 1 year he didn't work, but to make him work for another year, you shouldn't go out to Shesh, you should go out to Sheva. Because I only got 5 years worth of work, I want my full 6 years worth of work. So you might learn that from speaking that it's not. That a follow less than 3 years, if he was sick for less than 3 years, and he wasn't able to do anything, since Rove has money, did the work, he doesn't have to refund anything. If he was sick for more than 3 years, Rove of Dizman, then it depends how sick he was. If he was so sick he wasn't able to do anything, he was just laying in bed all day. Then he has to be mashed and he has to work for me longer until I get 6 full years of work. And he can't kind of just want to work, just want to make up till I'll do 3.5 years of work. Once he has to be mashed, he has to be mashed more to make the full 6 years of work. But if it's kollel, let's say for 3.5 years, if the kollel wasn't able to do originally, I bought him as an Eved Ivri because I thought that he's able to carry pianos for me. For example, the moving line. He wasn't able to carry piano, but he was able to take care of my books to do a lighter job. That I would have really paid him, I would have bought him for much less if that's all he was going to do. But for my side, I bought him for 6 years as an Eved Ivri. When you buy the Eved Ivri, you don't say I'm buying you for the, when you hire a worker, so you say I'm hiring you for job X, for job Y, for job A, B, C. When you buy an Eved Ivri, you don't say what you're buying for. I had in my mind, I'm buying him, he's understood, I'm going to buy him to do very heavy work. The heaviest work that I have. And then it turned out he wasn't healthy for 3.5 years, so he could, but he wasn't that sick, so he was able to do lighter jobs. He could do housekeeping, he could answer the telephone, easier things. Even I wouldn't have bought him in the first place, if But if he was being part of the work, so then he doesn't have to be mashlim at all. So that's by an evidibi. No, we don't have any evidibi in Bismara. You don't have any din evidibi. Shal is by a poil. Let's say Rebbe gets a job in Yeshiva, and it is fixed for more than half a year. It's for less than half a year. For a whole month he was out there. Had to pay another malamed to teach. Had to pay a substitute. So there's a malamed entitled to his salary for that amount of time. Places quote one opinion that a malamed, a poil, has the same din as an evidivri, that if he was sick for less than half and he absolutely was unable to do any work at all, he gets away with it. When he gets away with this, he gets his salary, even though he wasn't doing anything. If he was sick for more than half of the time and he wasn't able to do anything at all, then he doesn't get the salary. And then Tyson comes to the conclusion that it's not so much where we pass in the Chesh Mishpat, that a poil is not the same as an Eved. An Eved, I bought, like I buy a behemoth. And then the behemoth drops dead the day after I bought it. It's a tough one, so he lost. I buy a stock, then it goes down. It's a tough, you bought it, so it's yours. If it doesn't work out well, then you lost. If I buy an Eved, so even if the Eved doesn't do a stitch of work, strictly speaking, I say, I bought him, he belongs to me. I bought him for 6 years in life. If he doesn't do a stitch of work, I should say that that I bought him and I lose it. More than that, I'm stukim. No, there's kala more than shalosh. If it's sick more than 3 years, he has to be mashkin. But by a poil, I didn't buy the poil. I don't own the poil. The poil gets paid because he does the work. If he doesn't do the work, he doesn't get paid. So he's only sick 1 week. Strictly speaking, the school doesn't have to pay. Unless they have in the contract with us, unless the minigam dina is that they pay if he's sick. So that's the minigam dina is, and that's what's going to be part of the contract. But if there's no minigam dina, or even if there is, and the boss says, we're not going to follow the minigam dina, we're just going to follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, but then strictly speaking, we don't have such consideration. But if I engage a worker and the worker can't do the work, then I should say, he didn't do the work, he doesn't get paid. He only gets paid if he does the work. The din should be just the reverse by the work. That's how we eager din, that's how we pass. How much salary are you supposed to pay the worker? So whatever you make up, that's what you pay the worker. I don't know. Tosis equates the malam. Tosis will have to equate the malam to a foil worker. The thing that he gets paid not to work, and you understand that he's going to be teaching the kids. We only hire him to sit and not take a job if he's going to be teaching on the side for nothing. If he's not, then they didn't want to hire him for not doing the work, for not taking it.
The din is the difference between a poil and a kablon. A poil who has a job and has to be there from these hours to those hours has the right to back out on the job. Because if the poil couldn't back out, it would look like he's an Eved, and but a kablon, let's say, I'm an auto mechanic, and they bring in a broken car, and they say, how much is it going to cost to fix it? And I say, it's going to cost $625.88. Give him a whole bill. How much is it going to cost? Take it or leave it. But then if they agree, it's not long, I have to work for so many hours. I gave him a bill, and I said, that's how much it's going to be. If I can snap my fingers, I can say Hashem, I'm flourish, and make the car fix. He still has to pay me the $628.88. But it'll be made up. So a kablon who doesn't have to work for a specific time doesn't look like an Eved. So he has no right to back out in the middle of the job. That's the Gemara. So now, Afrayim have a topic, why does he have to work 2 hours a week, but he can pick whichever hours he wants? So should I treat him like a poil, or should I treat him like a kablon? Does he have a right to quit on the middle of the job? Or no, he's dealing with a kablon, he has to wait till the end. It's one of the differences between a poil and a kablon. There's another difference, the Rambam writes, between a poil and a kablon. How much do you have to pay the worker? Whatever you agreed to pay, that's how much you have to pay. What if you never made up an advance to hire a worker and they tell him, we'll pay you. How much are you going to pay? We'll pay you nicely. we'll pay you these and these. And then they never made up. And then at the end of the year, the end of the month, they have a hassle, they have a machlekes. So the worker says he wants more. The boss says no, he wants to pay him less. So what's the deal to the choice in number 18? The choice quotes of his boss in Golden Sea who says, in a separate psalm, if he was engaged, if he never fixed exactly what the Bnei HaTzeres, the amount of Hashemini HaTzeres will be, so the thing is that you only have to pay him Tafashi B'Koyim before Tamboitim Mechalei all of our eyes. You only pay him what's the least amount that a worker like him would get. Let's say in Minigam Dina, some people get $100 a week to do the job, some people get $150 a week, some people get $200 a week. So you don't take the average, you don't take the highest, you pay the lowest, unless he specified in advance how much you're going to pay. If there was no receipt there, then you pay the top of the toilet. But what if they said, if there was an Ashmael, that's okay, better than the lowest, or better than the average, above average, but then they have to keep that, then the shadow will be washed to the same look. You have to have a discharge. What's considered well. Better to be closest in advance. It's never good to rely on the precedent of the board. The shot is what happens if the boss engages a worker, let's say they engage a Rebbe in Yeshiva, it happens sometimes in Yeshiva. They tell a Rebbe, we're going to pay the same as all the Rebbe, $25,000 a year. Hey, he's so excited, he had a job, but we only got $25,000. Same as all the Rebbe, $25,000. Then he works on the job, then he finds out all the other Rebbe get $45,000 a year. So they said, you're going to pay him like all the other Rebbe, $25,000. So they fooled him. So how much do they have to pay in such a case? They led him to believe that they're paying him a decent salary, and it came out that it's absolutely not decent. Is there a din of Vainor or not? If the Rebbe knows in advance that everybody else gets paid $45,000, and they tell him, can you believe that we're going to pay you $25,000? It's a very poor salary, but we can't pay you anymore. Like in some issues, they say you're worth $1 million, but we can't afford it. So we'll pay you $20,000. So what if they tell him you're worth $1 million, but we can't afford that, this is all we're going to pay, take it or leave it, and he takes it, okay. But what if they fooled him into believing that that's the going risk? Or let's say the reverse case you can have also. He fooled the board into believing that that they should pay more. Let's say they're just starting a new coil. She even never had a coil before. Starting a new coil. And they engage a guy from Texas, and the head of the yeshiva doesn't know how much he's supposed to pay. He never had a coil before. So he says, the going rate all over the country is $100,000. Had a coil? $100,000. So the board says, no, he says, okay. He's going to pay $100,000. Then he finds out, no. Head of a coil is the same as any Rebbe in the yeshiva, or less, a little more. It's not $100,000. So what's the din if somebody fooled somebody else? The worker fooled the boss, or the boss fooled the worker in the area of Steve's coil. So there is a din of Ainoa in selling, in buying. There's a din of Ainoa. If I tell you that this watch sells in the store for $5, but it's my watch, it's not for sale. If you want the watch, I want $25, take it or leave it. So that's not Ainoa. If I make it clear to you that it's being sold for more than it's really worth, well, let's say you're interested in buying the watch. So you say, you know the watch is worth $25, but you only want to pay $5, take it or leave it. So then there's no din of Ainoa. If it's clear to the both parties that no one's being fooled, they know that it's really worth more, it's really worth less, then there's no penalties of Ainoa, no din of Ainoa. What happens if it was not clear to them? The person bought the watch for $25, thinking that that's how much it's worth, and came out that it's worth $5. He paid $5 thinking that's how much it's worth. And it's really $25, and the shopkeeper wants another $20. He says it was a mistake, he really wanted more. So there are din of Ainoa, even if the one who fooled the other one didn't intentionally cheat him on purpose in order to fool him, even if he didn't violate the Avera, there's an Avera no son who issues on meeting, not allowed to fool the other party, not allowed to come and tell him this kind of job is going to cost you $100,000, that's the going rate. That's an Avera to fool a person into believing that. But even if I didn't violate the Avera of Ainoa, that I fooled him into believing that that's how much he should pay, even if it was all beshaking on everybody's part, we thought it was $25, then it came out later on that it was worth $5. So there's still a penalty of Ainoa. The thing is that if it's true, if the mistaken price is 1/6, the penalty is you have to be master of the Ainoa. Whoever got pocketed the money has to return it to the other party. And if the error was off, the etzem is shtus, Igmar is all sugyan, how do you figure out shtus? This is not a penny, shtus is not to the penny, shtus is the whole range. The whole range is called shtus. So there are different ways to calculate, there are two ways to calculate shtus. So if the etzem is shtus, then the Gemara says the fellow who got cheated even has the shtus, to back out from the whole deal. He can give back the watch and say he wants all his money back. I don't just want $20 back. I don't want to buy from you at all. Even though he didn't even fool me. He just made a mistake himself. It's a mistake in price. It's more than understood. But then the one who was cheated has the right to be Kozer Mecca, has the right to back out completely. So the question is, what about by Sirus Poyla? So the Dinam of Ainoa applied to Sirus Poyla. So the Issur of Ainoa certainly applied to Sirus Poyla. To fool the person into believing, to hire a Rebbe, and to say, I'm going to pay you the going wages of all the yeshivas, that's the way everybody pays $25, and the going rate is not $25, much more. And this yeshiva, they pay $45,000, they pay this poor guy $20,000. But then the certainty is still no. He's still no on all of this. It's a certainty apply. The question is, forget about the usury. What about the penalty of Ainoa? Let's say they hired the person at the end of the year, he only got $25,000. That he finds out that it's much less than if they made it clear in advance that they really should pay more, but they just can't afford it, and the going rate is more, but they can't afford it. It's not a big deal. He agreed. If he agreed, he agreed. But if he only agreed to $25,000, thinking that that's the right amount, they led him to believe that that was the going rate, and this yeshiva, and only yeshiva, it turned out that it was wrong. So then there's a big dispute in the Rishonim, what's the din of Ainoa? Or the reverse, let's say, if the boss paid more. Well, by mistake, or the worker fooled the boss, if the worker didn't fool the boss, it doesn't matter. If the boss paid more than he should have paid, is there a din of master and no? Or is there a din of, well, a bottleneck if he can't have, what are you going to do? Oh, so the Rambam makes such a compromise. The Rambam says that it's between a poil and a kablon. The Rambam says if the fellow is a poil, he has 6 hours that he has to work. And we say, Adam, Bukish, Avodim Bukish the Kakor. The Mishnah Noah points out there's a machlekes Rashi and Tosfos in the first paragraph of the Kiddushin where they're only Avodim Hukshu Lekarkor or even B'nei Chorin. So he says that this Rambam seems to hold that even B'nei Chorin Hukshu Lekarkor. Either that or because a Chorin is Dino Ke'evet, either one or the other, Chorin is Dino Ke'evet means Avodibi, not Avodibi. Whatever the Pshat is, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam Malacha. The Rambam says that there's a chilek between a Poyel and a Kablam. They buy a Poyel, then it's as if he sold. As if he sold himself for that amount of time, from 9 to 5 every day, for these number of weeks, from the beginning of September to the end of June, whatever. So then the Adam is treated like Karka, either because the Nekorin are like Karka, or because the Poyel is Dina Kevet Ivri, whatever the theory is in the Rambam. And then there would be no Dina by Noah. There's no penalty. There's an Isra by Noah. There's an Isra by Noah by Karka also, we assume. But there wouldn't be the penalty of Noah. No one would have to refund the money if they cheated the other party. But by a Kablon, who gets paid to do a job, he doesn't get paid by the hour. So then, you don't say that he's treated like an Eved. So then the Rambam says that there would be a din of Ainoa. So then you would have this Shiloh, let's say, if a Malamed is engaged, the Rambam writes, if a Malamed is engaged, I engage a tutor to teach my son something. If I hire the tutor, then he should tutor the kid an hour a week. A special hour a week, because that's the hapoyo. If a Hayalam and Amen and Yeshiva should teach from 9 in the morning to 1 or 9 to 3, whatever, and cover as much ground as he can, that's a hapoyo, that's not a kabla. But if the Malamed was engaged to teach the kids Sefer Bereishit, in Europe, there are more talks about private tutors, they didn't have a yeshiva. But then the Malamed would stay there till it was finished to Sefer Bereishit. It could take a half a year, it could take a year, if the kid is stupid, it could take a year and a half. If the kid gets sick, it'll take you 2 years. And as long as it takes, you have to teach him. So then there are more than such a malamed is called a kablan. He's not considered a poet. He can make whatever hours he wants. He can teach the kid a minute a day, an hour a day. So understood that he shouldn't let the kid run extra. But he's not called a poet in the sense that he works from 9 to 5 or 9 to 1 or whatever. He's a kablan. He's not a Rebbe. We don't have things like that. The Rebbe is in the yeshiva. The Rav said the Shem HaChem that a malamed in the yeshiva has a din of a poet. Doesn't have a kablan. That's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say. You have to teach the shiur and the yeshiva, people like kashas. So he said, I'm not going to answer the kashas. The Rebbe Yeshiva doesn't sign a contract that he's going to explain this whole parish. He's going to work from 9 to 5 and try to give a course as much as he can, that's all. He didn't sign a contract to teach this parish to the students. Maybe less than a parish, maybe more than a parish. He may not be able to explain everything in the parish. Not my question. He said, "B'shem Abchaim, halacha l'maisan is." The Rambam makes a distinction that sometimes the malamed is in the kippur, sometimes the malamed is in the kikablon. Not a private malamed, a tutor was teaching the kids at home. In the days of the Rambam, they had a practice, and more recent years also, they would hire private malamed to teach the kids when they had no yeshiva. The kids went to public school. They hire a malamed, a house rebbe, to teach the kids, say the duration, teach the kids this tailor. And then when it was finished, the contract was up, however long it would take. But in yeshivas, you don't have such a setup. In yeshivas, all the rabbin have a din of a poil. So the Shulchan Aruch says that by a poil, there's no din of a noah. For the yeber, there certainly is a din of a noah. But for the yeber, the rebbe fooled the yeshiva fooled the rebbe, so there would be no penalty of a noah. Other Rishonim disagree. Other Rishonim hold that there's never any din of a noah by workers, even by a kabbalah not. But that's the way the Shulchan Aruch passes. It's been a poil and a kabbalah.
It's such a breakdown by Chatzi.
That's good in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's say I sell real estate. It says by karka there's no way, no, that's relevant. Sometimes that comes up too by Shulchan. Yeah, if I sell real estate that's worth, everybody says that this house should sell for not more than $130,000. And I sold this for $300,000. It's more than double the price. So more than double, it says there's only, But if it's yes and mipalga, then yes, I know the kashrut. If it's machlek, it's not kosher. Machlek, two versions of Rishonim. What if I charge exactly double? I didn't charge yes and mipalga, I charge exactly kefal. Everybody says in the neighborhood should sell for 130, and I charge exactly $260,000. Would you say that that's already oinu or not? But that then would apply to poil and moshe. Look, I gave a moshe before. If they hire a rebbe for $20,000 and they lead them to believe that that's how much a rebbe should be making, and all the rabbis are really making $45,000. So they're cheating him. Yes, and he called for it. They're cheating him. They should be paying him more than twice as much. So then there would be a din of oinah. We were passing, there would be a din of oinah. Even though the poil is din of kikarka, in that case, there would be a din of oinah. But if the error is less than palga, then not. He agrees to do a job for a fixed time. He doesn't really agree to finish a certain job. He agrees to do whatever work they have for the next year. Sometimes have a lot of work, sometimes have a little work.
It's both. It's just a job, and they'll pay you for a new day.
By the day.
So you get done with the job.
That's a fail. If they pay you by the day, by the hour, whenever they need you, that's certainly a problem. If they give you a fixed amount,
it's confined to this job, though.
If they pay you X amount of money to complete a certain project, no matter how long it takes, right? That's a real problem. That's for sure a problem. I don't know, certain cases you have, like I said, the Shlomo Kluger has papers about certain setups, so it's part of them, right? Part of the
time.
And they pay you by the hour, huh? They pay by the hour. That's a toilet. That's a toilet. Whenever they pay by the hour, then it's a toilet. Unless you have this situation, like a Plymouth worker has, that the worker has the right to pick whatever hour he wants. But since the worker can pick whatever hour he wants, it is not that the worker picks, like, so the parents are going to pick whenever the kid is free, and the worker agrees to do the work whenever they need him. Then I think that Plymouth worker would agree then that he's a toilet. No, he's not a cobbler. I don't
know. I
think I've spun the clue that satisfies if I have to do work 2 hours a week, but I can take whichever 2 hours I want. That's what he means. But then he has a topic. Right. Then he has a topic. Maybe I should treat that like a comment. I don't know.
There are a lot of companies, especially that they'll say you have to work 8 hours a day, but you have to actually have a plan. But you can work it at different
day or night.
Some night,
so that's something like that Shlomo Kluger suffered. Right. As a suffering was that would be treated like a foil or a cup. The hours are not fixed by the board, but rather fixed by the work. Severance pay is always a big issue that people make machlokes in about. It's not a din, there is no law of severance pay. It's all about the number we used to pay a rabbi severance pay. When he leaves, when he retires, goodbye. The yeshiva is not what we used to pay a malamid severance pay. If they had the right to drop him because he's no good, or because he's old, and he's too old, and he can't function well, or whatever, he's weak, he's traveling to the government, they're not what we used to give severance pay. If they brought him up just right, amidst the self pay base, that is a nice thing to give a matana to the toil when he finishes working on the job, similar to the Zinus HaNokim. When the Yebid, if he finishes working for me for the 6 years or whatever he's going to, the Yoga or whatever it happens to be, but then the Torah requires of us a mitzvah HaNokim to the Sefer HaFinis Raita. From here we should learn a Musar, and when you have a toil, when you have a worker, it's a mitzvah HaNokim that you should give, you should pay him a tip at the end. Hakoros HaTayyip for all the work that he did. Even though you were paying his salary the whole time, so what do you mean Hakoros HaTayyip? Just give another Hakoros HaTayyip. But there are no fixed rules about this, unless there's a minig hamdina, unless you have, let's say, Talmud or established a minig, what they feel is proper to say seven days to teachers. Even if the teacher's not doing a lousy job, let's say, the guy was already in yeshiva for 20 years, and now he's old, now he's burnt out, he can't teach anymore, so they have to drop him because he's not doing a good job. This is how it happens, he wants to stay on and hold his tail, and they have to fire him, and it'll be my pleasure, but still, if the minig hamdina is that he gives seven days, so that is built into the tenoi hasivas in the first place. When they hired you, it was understood that they're hiring you to see minig hamdina. That's the mishnah above the sinah, sefer tapelim. Whenever you hire a worker, you have to spell out each and every condition of the job, whatever is involved, whatever is ongenum, whatever is understood to be the minig hamdina, is understood to be one of the conditions of the job. Number 2 is out of order. The 22. Number 22 is out of order. Ramesha has an interesting tshuva, which is also very relevant. The Gila Dina comes up very well. Malami, we have a community yeshiva, community day school. He has a different tshuva about it. Shoshu, but it's the same. The community day school. And they hire a Malami Lamizis out of town. But they hire him and they write in the contract, or they say Balpeh, that it's understood that they're only giving him the job on the condition that he's going to move into town. No, they give him the job, let's say, in July. They know he can't necessarily find a job by September. So within reason, they understand, we're going to give him a reasonable time so he's going to find in the community. Why? Because they want that the Rabbeim should be a role model for the students. They should have in the community. Shabbos and Yom Tov, they should see the guy. Shouldn't just be a visiting professor, come in and say the shiur and then leave. They don't want that. So the guy signs the contract, he agrees to this condition, he gets the job, and then his wife doesn't like his mentor, his wife decides she doesn't want to move him. And his school didn't drop him, and he's already on the job for 10 years. And now they decide they want to drop him for some other reason, whatever, but they can't really, he doesn't get along with the principal or something. According to Ramesh's tutor, let's consider doing a good job. The students still like him, but the board doesn't like him. They have to get something out of him. So they got this school, so he never moved into the community, he's violating the conditions of the contract. Strictly speaking, he's not entitled to the job. The job is only on the understanding of move into the community within a reasonable amount of time. And he didn't. 10 years is not reasonable. So Ramosha writes in the tshuva that the guy was on the job for so long, and it's obvious that the reasonable amount of time ended. So they were meichel on it tonight. And he says it's understood that he retains his job without that condition. But it has to be that he's on the job for a reasonable amount of time. Let's say he already gets into a fight with the principal in the third month. He just came. He's already into a fight with the principal. But he's doing a good job, the students are happy, his parents are happy, just that the principal and the members of the board don't get along with him, they want to get rid of him. So then they can say, look, the contract says you have to move in, and they know he's not going to move in. So it's the family reasons why he's not going to move in. So then they can hold it up against him. He insists that you have to move in within a reasonable amount of time. He gives you another 2-3 months. Otherwise, we're going to drop you. So then they do have the right. Because there was no limit of Nechila. But if he's there for long enough time, you have to figure out what's considered long enough time. And they see that he doesn't plan to move in, then there's a limit of Nechila. This is a common problem. Yes. There's an issue in number 17. Avani Hamahapet Sahayorah. I don't know, but I would think that yes. I think if they write this into the contract, it's understood that they're trying with each person to improve the skill by having a movement in the community. And if they can't succeed, so they'll be mindful after a couple of years. But if in the beginning they see it's already no good, but then part of the way user doesn't get along with the board and he's not in the community. I would assume that the clause that that condition is binding them. not a built-in nechila before you even begin. I would assume.
Using it as a principle, it doesn't get along with an assumption. Using it in that case just as a mechanism to get rid of it.
Okay.
Because it's kind of mentioned in the Tila, but it's so that he would have let it go. He knows himself that he would have eventually been lost.
They would let it go. If you have a good Rebbe, so you let go that he doesn't do everything that he's supposed to do. Because it's hard to get a good worker. Well, not only that, it's hard to get a good worker in any field.
Use that time if they would have let it go.
That was one of the conditions. If I have a lease on my property, and the lease has a fine print, you're not allowed to put it in air conditioning, you're not allowed to put it in a refrigerator, you're not allowed to put it in a freezer, you're not allowed, every lease has these crazy things there. And the landlord knows that everybody has all these things, you know. And he visited my apartment many times and he sees that I have it. And then one fine day he gets into a fight with me, he's going to kick me out because I have an air conditioner. But that's an umdur of mechila, because he's seen it and he knows that I have it. But Kozman, that he hasn't seen it yet, I've just learned that you can't say that it's a built-in. You don't say that everybody just puts it in. No, that's why they put in these conditions in order to be able to throw people out whenever they want. So the condition is still binding. It's still in the wonder of the mechit. But in the beginning, there is no wonder of the mechit. Yeah. It's a din pilechah is about through the b'emtzah yom, and then he gets paid for the work that he did. What's halacha, let's say, if a person is a Rebbe in a yeshiva? And every so often he decides to take off and send his son to take shiur for him. Or guy's a mashgiach. Guy gives a hashgacha. And then it has a big name, but it has a very big name. And then instead of him going to take care of the hashgacha, he sends one guy to a bracha for the yeshiva. And the company wouldn't give the hashgacha if it says Mr. Schwartz. No one knows who Mr. Schwartz is. Bracha and yeshiva. They want to have Rabbi XYZ, his name. So he sends Mr. Schwartz to take care of the hashgacha. Or they hired this Rebbe, he should say shiva. They didn't hire his son. His son-in-law, whatever it is. And then he decides to take off the flower. He's going to send his son. Is that acceptable or not? And Moshe hasn't shiva about that also. Number 9 has a shiva about this. Again, Ladina. So there's a thin reason. Sometimes the guy finds it difficult to come to us. Understood that whenever he can't do it, he's going to send someone else whom he considers qualified, whom he considers capable. But so let's say to do it more than is reasonable, in an unreasonable fashion, and he says certainly not. Then he thinks about a hashgacha, he thinks that yes. Things, even though they wouldn't give the hashgacha to Mr. Schwartz, they only give the hashgacha to Rabbi XYZ, they want to have Rabbi Pliny's hashgacha. If Schwartz would give the hashgacha, they wouldn't give. But Rabbi Pliny says that I know that Schwartz is reliable. So Rabbi Pliny is giving the hashgacha. He says by hashgacha, he thinks it is. He happens to be talking about a case that I think the son was more reliable than the father. Look up the truth. Son was fluent than the father, more reliable than the father. There's a Mitzvah you that we all know who you are. And he says, you know, your father's also a great tzaddik, but the son was better than the father. But the fact in this case, everybody knows, and they would have given you the job also, you have a good name on your own. But in Hashgacha, it's these nice to think that it's okay. In other jobs, it's not. Because Hashgacha only means to come check in. So if I send another guy to check, so I'm doing the job. It's considered that I'm doing the job. With a long arm, I send the other guy. But for a teaching job, I said they hired me to teach, and then I'll take off whenever I want. Every week I'll take off and I'll send someone else to teach them. But that's not. It's understood that I'm going to do the job, not to send someone else in an unreasonable fashion.
I mean, who should us to determine the reasonable substitute?
Follow? I would think it's up to the board, not up to the worker. I would think so. I was really supposed to talk about a different topic, but that we'll discuss now. What about the Rebbe's and Yeshiva uniting to organize a union, or to make a strike to hire wages? So what's the difference? So that's what you have the Maror Kermis on over here. The Jewish workers in Eretz Yisrael, before the Hakamas HaMedina, charged, as today, charged more than the Arab workers. The Arabs do the work for much less. So the people who had the farms used to hire Arab workers. Why should they hire Jews if they have to pay more money? So the Jews organized picket lines, they used to do acts of vandalism, they used to kill chickens on the farm. People didn't, so they used to kill chickens on the farm, and they used to burn down some of the crops, and they used to harass the farmers and so on to force them into taking avodah avit, only taking Jewish workers, not to take Arab workers. So the question was, if this is a father mamanti, what right do you have to burn down their property? What right do you have to make a picket line and to prevent the Arab workers from going to do the work on the farm for Hanisir? And not let the Gurim have to the other people. So Rabbi Chanan Vassenin, who didn't live in Eretz Yisrael, who lived in Baranovich, sent a letter to the newspapers in Eretz Yisrael that was right away printed. They hung up these mazoids all over the shuls and all over the bottom rushes. And if you need to gomer to organize a union for this purpose, to force, to vandalize property of the forces, to damage any property or to prevent the Arab workers from coming, they have no rights. These are my mind. Tandy Rabbi Chanan didn't consult with too many other people on this issue. Rabbi Chanan wasn't known as the big international place. He was in Rosh Hashiva and passed the Aliyah of the Shabbos. He didn't pass in the heart transplant Shabbos. He passed in the little Shabbos. So Rabbi Chaim Eisen, his brother-in-law, who is the real person with the capital K, he passed in the brain death Shabbos and the heart transplant Shabbos. So he was consulted and he said, what happened over here? Why didn't you consult me? What's going on? Now Reuven Katz, that's Rabbi Katz's father, was the Rav in Petach Tikva. He lived in Eretz Yisrael, so he was faced with these problems. So he sent a letter to Rav Chaim Eisen asking him, what does he say about this? And Rabbi Chanan wrote a tshuva and printed it and hanging it up all over. So he wrote the letter. He doesn't understand, how can my brother do such a thing? He didn't consult anybody. He did on his own. He didn't want to say, I passed in against him. He said, my brother-in-law doesn't know. Chanan doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't really know all the conditions of the story. I think the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael have to pass. They knew what the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael were going to say. Rabbi Chanan said, you can't follow the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael because they're all getting shechad. Because they're all supported. They're all salaried by these Jews who are making the union, who are making the boycott. And it says in the Torah, Kashef and Yavrin Chachamim. The Torah is talking about real Chachamim, not fake Chachamim. We're talking about Rabbonim, Tzadikim, and it says Sheikh and Ma'aper. So they have been paid and salaried by these workers. Of course they're going to pass in the favor of the workers. So Reuven Katz was afraid to make a stand. Sheikh is also salaried. He was a rabbi in Tzadikim. He sent a shalom to Rav Chaim Eisen. Rav Chaim Eisen didn't want to say Rav Chaim Eisen is wrong. He said, I think the Rabbonim and Eretz Yisrael know this story better than us. We're all in Europe. So he said, we should all be Mitzuluk. All the Rabbonim in Europe should be Mitzuluk from this. The Rabbonim and Eretz Yisrael know what's going on. They should take it. Hanish also took a stand. He sent a letter to Rabbi Chanan, which has not yet been published. It referred to it in all of these three books were printed by the same author. Or Rabbi Chanan is a very fascinating two-volume biography of Rabbi Chanan Vassman. At times it gets very repetitious and very boring. They teach the same thing, that one guy thought about Yadav and Shachas and Rosh Hashanah and Baran, the other guy thought about Yadav and Moses and Yom Kippur, same thing, but parts of it are very, very fast, and you have a lot of learning there, interesting. And then the next one is the Achiezer. Chaim Eisen has three volumes of tshuvas that are called Achiezer. But those tshuvas he edited. Achiezer tshuvas he edited and he published himself. These two volumes of Achiezer, which were printed about 20 years ago in Bnei Brak, these are later, additional, not later, these are other letters of Shuvas, letters and Shuvas, politics and all kinds of aces, written by Rav Chaim Eisen, which Rav Chaim Eisen did not edit. So it's very fascinating. You have more to the Shuvas here. He writes here, he consulted, as I mentioned the other week, he consulted with Rav Baron Kotlan, he consulted with Rav Bovelos Oveitchik, he consulted with Rav Hanachagis, he consulted this one and that one. Very fascinating. So he has here the letters, what Rav Chaim Eisen said about the strike. And the third one is the Pe'er Ador, that's the five-volume biography. That's printed by the same outfit as the Achiezer. The same people printed that. The other one, the Orach Chanan, is printed by different people, but they're related. So the Pe'er Ador is a five-volume biography of the Chazon Ish, which is also very valuable. Although sometimes it gets so obviously politically oriented, but a lot of parts of it are very fascinating. It has a lot of halacha. Second volume has a lot of halacha, and the other volume has halacha, an interesting hashrafa. So they quoted that everybody knew at that time that the Chazanish had sent a letter to Rabbi Chanan attacking everything that he wrote in his children, and disagreed with everything, but no one ever was mefarshim the letter. They have the letter, Ada Yamazan Nebat, and no one ever, the outside world hasn't seen the letter yet. Part of the issue was the following. Rabbi Chanan is upright. And he's a magic. The guy has the right to hire whoever he wants. He doesn't want to hire you, so he's fine. What's the deal? So part of the story is like this. There is a deal. Tomorrow, when you see one knock on the poster, if you think for an incar, Lami Sefa, Tonami Ami Sefa, Tonu Isha Sami, Bashan Tahar. But the place at the end of Kumashi, so the Gemara Dash, if you think for an incar, Lami Sefa, whenever you sell it, if you need to sell your car to the Jew, so if you're not Jew, you should choose to sell Lami Sefa. Oh, Kono, if you want to buy, if you want to go shopping, Oh, Kono, Miara Misefa, if I can go shopping in Slomo, if I can go shopping in the A&T, I should go shopping by Mr. Slomo, you should always buy by a Jew. That's what the Gemara learns out of the part. Because in that same part, we also understand that if you can get two workers to do a job, you can get either a Jew or a non-Jew, they should always do the job to the Jew. The only shot is, what if the Jew is going to charge 5 times as much as the Arab? 20 times as much as the Arab. But if we go to the shop, the little shop on the corner, he charges twice as much as the A&T. So if I can afford it, they're very nice. But what if I don't make so much money? I'm free to go buy by the Jew who charges more money. But that's a Shiloh. So there's a Shiloh in the Ramah. But the Ramah says yes. The Ramah's cousin was the Maharam Padawan, who published the Rambam with the Hagoyah. So we have, if you look in the Rambam, to the tiny letters on the bottom of the Rambam, before you have the Mishnah, the Mishnah on the side, Hagoyah's Mami on the bottom. In between the Rambam, the letters that you never look at, on the bottom of the Rambam, before the lines of the Magen Mishnah, the Mishnah, there's sometimes one line on a page, sometimes two lines on a page, not so much. That's called the Hagoyah Hamatsu. That's what the Maharam Padawa added onto the Rambam. He gives you sometimes the Maharam off into a tour, sometimes a correction, you can give it. So he printed this Rambam with the Hagoyah, with this Hagoyah. And before he had a chance to sell all of his editions, Hagoyah printed another Rambam. He couldn't print his Hagoyah. The copyright, I'm not going to print it. He printed an old Rambam, a regular Rambam, without the Hagoyah of the Maharam Padawa. And the guy was selling it for much less than the Maharam Padawa was. So the Maharam Padawa was losing a fortune of money, because who wants to buy such an expensive Rambam just because it has two lines on every other page? You can buy for $55 less. The Rambam was out to two lines on every page. So the Ramah wrote a long tshuva to support his cousin, despite that problem, his cousin. He was strongly in the Gebedot. He gives us 7 reasons why the Jews are not allowed to buy the Rambam from the Goy before they buy the Rambam from his cousin. The first reason he gives is that Sefer Shena Muga. Also, the Hashem Sefer Shena Muga in the house. The Gemara says, Mitzubis. But you're not allowed to have a book, Sefer Halacha, that has mistakes in it. So from Aram was Magia, the Rambam, you have one that goes into the Sarada. Of course, you have to have the Sefer Hamuga. That's one reason. And there's another reason that Mantarva Atama Sakhar, the Gemara says in Balabatam, the second parish, when Atama Sakhar comes to town and he's selling pumpkins, and the Balabatam is selling pumpkins, you have to give the Shukin, that Tina Le Shukin, you have to give the market to the Atama Sakhar. After he sells all his pumpkins, he sits down to learn, and then the others have a right to sell. And he says that even a Goy is losing on his bid. The Goy is forbidden. The Nachi who printed the Rambam is forbidden to sell his Rambam. Not even that the customers are not allowed to buy. The Nachi is not allowed to sell till the Tamachachim sells all of his Rambam. The Nachi also has his din, so he has to give the Shukah to the Tamachachim. He sends a page and he has to explain why, to prove that that's so. And then he goes, and then he gives the reason after reason, and then he says in the din and the Gemara that you have to buy from Yisrael and not from a Nachi if you have the option. Even applies this, of course, more. Pneishu also says like that. I mean, Gemara by Messiah. Pneishu was later. Pneishu shows in the Gemara like that. Pneishu wasn't related. It was not a Gemara. That was just right. That's the Kutayr. He says also that from the Gemara it would appear like that because the Gemara says it's a mitzvah to lend shalom veridus to a Jew. Have $100 that I can lend. I don't need the money. It's sitting around. So I can either lend the money to an Achri and get interest. I put it in the bank. Lend it to an Achri and get interest. Or lend it to a Jew and to be forbidden to get interest. But the Gemara goes out on the topic that there's a din kedima, you have to lend to the Yisrael shalom beribis, to Usher, rather than to lend to the Nafri beribis.
In one case you're losing, in one case you're not gaining. It's just like the beginning of Matthias, by a Matthias. The guy had a hobby to think, and think he's not losing anything.
Right. Even so, the Pnei Yeshua claims that there's a tushta. You can ding them. They are stark on a tushta. You can deal with us. He says that just like there, you have to lend to the Yisrael Shaloi Beridus rather than lend to the Nachri Beridus. That's lined up in the Pasuk. So what Adinami, if they're both selling merchandise, even though the Yisrael charges more, you still have the mitzvah to do the Kedima to the Yisrael. So the so then Rabbi Chanan is wrong. Then I should say that the Jews do have the right. The boss has to hire the Jewish workers, even though it's going to cost them more money. He has to hire the Jewish workers. The only thing is, he has to hire the Jewish workers as a din. You have a right to burn down his property. You have to have a right to have a picket line, not to let the Arab workers come in. The eggs on the farm are going to get broken and everything's going to get rotten and spoiled. You have a right to do that. Yeah, so that wouldn't be so bad if the din would require that the boss has to give the job to the Jewish workers, even though it's going to cost them more. So then the din should be that we do force him to do this. There is a din that if a person is violating the halacha, whether in the area of the dinamanus or in the area of the sedenator, you force him to observe the mitzvah. The only thing is that the one who does the forcing is supposed to be the bezin. The Rabbanim, Rabbi Reuven Katz and the Chazanish weren't going to go, they helped with the workers, but they weren't going to go to do the forcing. So the workers did on their own, and the workers didn't consult the bezin. The workers, number one, did on their own, the Rabbanim didn't do it, they didn't consult the bezin. So they weren't so bothered about that. All the Rabbanim involved, they would have all agreed that that's okay. They can unionize, they can strike, they can take it, they can do. Why? There is a din of Makam Yonshin, there is a din of Ovid Imish, din of Anafshay, the Makam Dikab Seder. There's a din of Hashemish, but the very beginning of Hashemish was sin in Beis, or sin in Gimel. The very beginning, they called the Gemara in Baba Kama, that's for Falas, that's for Beis, Ovid Imish, din of Anafshay, the Makam Dikab Seder. You're not allowed to take the law into your own hands, you have to go to Bezdin. But if I go to Bezdin, and until I go to Bezdin, the Janik will clean out my whole apartment, they'll steal all the property. And then it'll be too late, I won't be able to retrieve it. So then the Gemara says, if it's clear, absolutely clear, that that's the din, so the din is of it in the din and of shame and welcome to Jacob's state. So that's what they all assumed, that they would be allowed to. Rav Moshe also has a tshuva about this. Number 20.
Which
state
means monetary or
other state? Parnassa. You need a parnassa.
From that meeting or and against the US as such a thing. A movie house in the middle of opens up in the middle of some neighborhood.
Right, right. So you have to have a Hayuaz Kocham, that's what I mentioned about the video, to have a Hayuaz Kocham, the Chazanish and Rabbi Reuven Katz and the Rabbanim should pass in, and let's say the Rabbanim today, if the Rebbe's in Yeshiva want to organize a union and they want to strike. They want to strike, they're not going to teach for a week in order that the board of directors should understand that they have to be salaried more. So would they be allowed to do that? So he says, strictly speaking, the Rabbanim have to judge whether they're being salaried properly or not. The Rebbe's not allowed to ask for full salary, he only gets Chabatola has to be a significant amount also. He has a family that's entitled to certain Chabatola. So they should really have a bezin to determine how much his Chabatola is. And the bezin should ask him that if the yeshiva is only paying the guy $20,000 and he teaches all day long, so that's not enough, that's not really right. And if the board of directors don't agree to give in, so the bezin should really ask him that we're going to be kind to him. The way to be kind to them is by being mevatel in the learning of the Talmidim, if need be. If that's the only weapon that they have is by striking. So then it says it will be permissible to strike. How can it be mevatel tachan aveira bittul torah? He says sometimes you're permitted to be mevatel torah, and he considers this an instance. The only thing is, he says, which bezin are you going to get? 1985, 1986, which bezin are you going to get? Which rabbi is going to put his name on the psak? Which rabbi is going to say, even Baal Peh, without putting his name on the psak, and even if he tells you to keep it a secret, which rabbi is going to pass on that they should strike? He says, you don't have a rabbi. You don't have a rabbi, so the din is called in your deal and an abshay. That's the same as the Chazanish, the same as all the other things. The same Peh, the same thing, all the din is deal and abshay. They have the right to take the law into their own hands, because you won't. You'll never get a bezin to pass on this, but they have to be within reason. Let's say the yeshivas are paying the Rebbe $60,000 a year, so the gun's good, and then the Rebbe wants $65,000 with more insurance coverage. So that's not right. They're not entitled. They're not entitled to demand that. If the yeshiva wants to give, it's very nice, but that's not a right to demand that. So everybody would have agreed over here. Everybody would have agreed that the workers have a right to organize a union, to strike and to picket and to do the hezekim and everything. That three ala mitzvahs, they should be paid for the farm owners and the kibbutzim to give them the jobs that they're required to give. And if need be, they can make hefset also in order to be paid for them. And if the bezin won't pass them, they have a right to do it on their own. Because it was really, they had children, had families, and there was no parnasa for these Jewish workers. The hitch over here was that most of the workers in Eretz Yisrael are absolutely non-observant. Capital non-observant. They were anti-religious. So that was Rabbi Chanan's hang up. That's what Rabbi Chanan said. Anti-religious people, we have a mitzvah tzedakah for them. There's no chiyuv tzedakah. So therefore, the stock is wrong. You don't have a chiyuv. You have a Jewish shopkeeper and a guy, and a Jew is an anti-religious person. He's an apikiris. So I don't have any chiyuv that I have to be mefarnesim. And then I can go buy by the guy. Even if the price is the same, I can buy by the guy. You have no chiyuv. That's why Ochanan has this long harangue against the workers in Eretz Yisrael that they're absolutely not religious at all. Not some that they don't wash megavaz, they don't keep Paris on the Shpacha once in a while. They're absolutely, they don't go to Shul Hashanah Yom Kippur, they're absolutely anti-religious. We don't have any chiyuv tzedakah for them, so therefore the stock would not be kedin, and therefore they have no right to form a union and to strike and to picket and so on. And even so, the Chazanish said that it's wrong. So when do you say you don't have a chiyuv tzedakah? On a one-to-one basis, the din is, and because it's been a kaf, you don't have a chiyuv tzedakah. You have a chiyuv tzedakah, same chiyuv tzedakah, but you have to one nachri. The din is mefarnes mani yakev mani yisom esnei dak yisholem. The din of chiyuv tzedakah to a nachri also. The same chiyuv tzedakah to the chiyuv who is anti-religious. But if you have a medina, that's what Rav Chaim Oizer writes in his letter to Rav Reuven Katz. Says Rav Chanan lives in Poland, he lives in Europe, and he doesn't know what it means to have a medina with a lot of Jews, and he says he's not there, he doesn't see it. Like I said, they said, you can't talk to a shalom and chicken, you're not looking at the chicken. Rav Chaim Oizer writes, he's not there, he doesn't know, it's a medina, everything is different, the whole Messias is different. You have to use different demons. That's what the Chazanish says. If you have a whole community, but you have so many Jews, either anti-religious, but still you have so many Jews there and they have big families, so there is a din that the person has an obligation to be mefarnes them over the goyim. There is such a din. Even on a one-to-one basis, there is no chayvas tzedakah. But to establish a community, community-wise, if they're all anti-religious, so you have no barriers, then there is a kedima to them. So that's what the Chazanish held, like Reb Chaim Oizer, that they had a right. If the Bezin should have paskin, the Bezin should paskin, and because for the bosses to give them parnasa, rather than the Yarev workers. The Gemara has been like this. The Bezin has, it's the obligation of the Bezin and the government to fix prices, that people shouldn't charge too much in the stores, and to establish minimum wages, minimum wage standards. That's the obligation of the Bezin and the obligation of the government. So Tikkun HaMedina. Every government has that obligation. It's a real din d'oraita. The Gemara learned that from Sukkim. So here also, part of the obligation, if they were holding by, they had Jews there, you have so many Jews there, it's not a Shabbat tzedakah to one apikoros. I have no mochit to give tzedakah to the apikoros. Then to the goy, the Arab has the same din as the apikoros. But you have a whole community full of Jews, hundreds of Jews. So then he said, there is a din of saying Tikkun HaMedina that the mochit to be the finest of Jews more so than the goy. That's another question. Right, that's a question. If you have a person who is an apikoros b'shogeg, an apikoros shalishbo, so the Rambam writes that there is a punishment that the Gemara recommends for apikoros that to try to bump them off and make it look like an accident. If that will help. If you have, let's say, a whole religious community, you have one apikoros who's making trouble, so the Gemara says that no reason will allow. If you try to bump them off, not from the Yom Shoshlem has it. If you have a whole community, you have hundreds of apikoros, and you bump one off, you're going to have another 99. If you bump off 90, you have then you'll have others, so then you won't accomplish anything, so then you don't have this group. The Gemara says, this is a reason will allow, and the Gemara says, this is based on the principle of not religious.